We're doing the Drashot Aran. We're up to page Samech Tes in the Shalem edition, page Kuf Tzadi in the Masada of Kuk edition. Davar Barur V'Yadua. It's a well-known thing. Ki Kmo She'Aleichut Poelet B'Midot, Ken Amidot Poalot B'Aleichut. Just as the components of biological components within the body affect our traits, so it goes the other way too. Our traits affect the biological components, call it the chemistry of the mind. Just as you have people who have a certain biological makeup that causes them to be so they're more prone to anger. It goes the other way too. If a person is continuously angry, so then he can affect his chemical makeup. And then he can change his predisposition to being a person who is more predisposed to anger. And this goes for all traits. You can be more predisposed to a certain trait, and you can also get accustomed to a certain trait, so you could cause yourself to be predisposed to that trait. So if a person has had the habit of having certain bad traits, so then he alters his temperament and his nature to be predisposed to those traits. And you find that usually children's natures, the nature of the children, is drawn to follow the nature of their fathers. And that's why the people of Canaan, who were evil people, so then it followed naturally that it would follow naturally that their children would be more prone to follow suit. And even though Lavan was a pagan, but that doesn't mean his children had to be pagans. The Ran is going back to the point he had explained earlier, and he said that a person is affected by their family with regards to their traits. When a person's family has a certain trait, then that affects him, and it's most likely he will follow suit. He is more predisposed to that trait. But when a person grows up in a home that has a certain philosophy, even though that might be his default philosophy, because that's what he grows up with, but it's not ingrained in him. A person can change philosophies. But traits is something that's much harder to change. Our traits and our personality, to a great extent, follow suit with the home we grow up in. And so if a person grows up in a home that cares about other people, it's more natural to him to care about other people. If a person grows up in a home that cheats other people and that thinks about how to hurt other people, so then that's more natural to him. So when Avram Avinu and Yitzchak Avinu, when they want wives from their own family, they're not looking for the philosophy, because philosophy is something that's a product of the mind. A person might grow up with a certain philosophy, but then it's up to them to choose which philosophy they'll follow. And they're not predisposed to this philosophy more than another, just because they grew up with it. Whereas a person's traits, that's something that a person is affected by the habits, by the home that they've grown up in. Because when you're marrying someone, when you're looking for someone to build a life with, so then the thing you have to be most concerned about is the personality traits, the predispositions that are there and are going to be the root of a person's actions later. Yes, you could always change your traits, you could. But your starting point, your point that's ingrained within you, is the home you grew up in. Ukmo shamru razal, havli libach ve'inach, v'ana yada de'at dili. Our sages said, give me your heart and your eyes, and I'll know that you're mine. So there are things that are affected and affect everything we do. And And even though when God says that, give me your heart and your eyes and I know you're mine. So that quote combines the eye with the heart. Don't misunderstand it. Don't think that the eyes have the same function as the heart in deciding how we behave. The eye doesn't really cause you to have a good trait or a bad trait. The eye is a tool. But the eye is what it gives over to the heart its impression, what it sees. So a person sees and then decides how to act. So when Hashem says, give me your eye and your heart and I know your mind, that's not because the eye makes any decisions. The heart makes the decisions. But the eye is the tool that we use to perceive and then synthesize what we've seen, what we've perceived, and act on it. But the eye does focus on certain things, does decide to look at certain things, and the eye works in cohorts with the heart. And because the root of everything we do is in our heart, so the verse says, "Mikol mishmanetzo libecha ki mimenu totzot chaim." Watch your heart from all the things the Torah warns, because that is the root of life. And at the end of the day, the major question that a person has to ask himself is, where's my heart? What traits have I developed within myself? Because our actions are going to be a product of where we've placed our heart. A person that decides what's important to him in life is to be a millionaire, well, at the end of the day, that's going to come to play. I often ask people, where do you want to see yourself in 20 years? What are your aspirations? Those of you who have met with me know that one of the first things I do when people discuss with me the future, I say is, let's map out a chart. Where do you want to be in 20 years, in 10 years, in 5 years, in 3 years, in 6 months? But let's start with the 20 years. What are your big goals in life? Where's your heart? What's your heart set on? What? Some people say family, some people say wealth, some people say all kinds of things, and everything's legitimate. But depending on where your focus is, where's your heart, that very often defines where you're going to go, or how you're going to react to things in life. Before people discuss with me how to compromise and what to compromise on and what their priorities should be tomorrow, I need to understand where do they want to go in 20 years. And then when we think about 20 years and 10 years and 5 years, then we can think about 6 months from now. So we might say, okay, the next 6 months are not relevant to the next 20 years. The next 6 months, I want to focus on taking a break, or I want to focus on learning X, Y, or Z. But first, let's understand where are we going. We might say, we'll compromise the next 6 months. The next 6 months, I'm not working on that. Fine. But then that's a different decision. That's totally different. So the Ran says, at the end of the day, the pivotal point that directs us in life is where our hearts are focused on. And that's why Avram and Yitzchak wanted shiduchim for their children from their own families, because they knew that the philosophies might be very warped in Lavan's home, in Besuel's home. But the hearts are focused on the positive, on helping humanity. And the verse says, watch your heart, because that's the root of life. And even though some commentaries explain the pasuk shemimenu shaven mishmar, that when the verse says that is the source of life, it means from watching things, that is the source of life. Ve'otzono lomar sheba lazhir sheintzor ha'adam atzmo leval yakel b'shum mishmar. So they explain the verse, that is the source of life, is a reference to watching yourself, not watching your heart, but just watching the not to transgress. And that's a reference of a person adhering to the rabbinic institutions, even though they might seem easy for him. And why did the rabbi say I shouldn't touch a pen on Shabbos? I can walk around with a pen, I won't write on Shabbos. But it's rabbinic. No, so no, our sages said that is the source of life. That is what some of the commentaries say. That when the pasuk says, watch your heart of all that should be watched, it's a reference, when it says that is the source of life, that's a reference to that which should be watched. Don't treat the rabbinic institutions lightly, rather recognize that that should be watched, and that is the source of life. Mimenu totzot chayim, zeo perush raboteinu zal, v'imeyoto inyan amiti, bli sefek mikol makom, He says, although our sages do interpret the verse that way, I think that the verse does indicate what I said. That when it says that is the source of life, it's talking about the heart. It's not only talking about watching the rabbinic institutions. You want me to find the place? She'im ken, la'aya lo lomar libecha. Because if the verse only meant what our sages interpreted in the verse, then it should have just said, watch yourself from all watchings. Why does it say, watch your heart from all watchings, for it is the source of life? Why does it stress the heart in the pasuk? When we're talking about rabbinic institutions, we're talking about your actions, not your heart. It says, watch yourself, and it says, watch yourself from all things that the heart must watch. Why does it stress the heart if it's only coming to infer what the rabbi said? So that's why I think, that when the verse says, for it is the source of life, it's not talking about watching the rabbinic institutions in this verse, but rather it's talking about your heart. Your heart is the source of life. Because if it's only referring to the rabbinic institutions, the heart shouldn't have been mentioned. He says this is an amazing concept, and this has a tremendous application. What's the application? The mashal is as follows. Ki hamashal bedavar chumri, v'animshal bedavar nafshi, v'shnehem b'inyan echad, u'venoseh echad shaveh b'shaveh. He says, there are two hearts. When we speak about the heart, so there's the physical heart that pumps blood, and then there's the heart where you say, my heart throbs. Are you talking about this heart? You're talking about your life. Well, sometimes we say, my heart goes out to you. You mean the physical heart that's pumping blood? You don't mean that. So he says, when the verse says, watch your heart from everything that requires watching, for it is the source of life, so then that's an illusion. The heart is very often an illusion to the personality, to the neshama. And that's what the pasuk is talking about. When the pasuk says, watch your heart, it's, yeah, watch your heart. Have low cholesterol, right? Be careful. That is the source of life. That's the simple reading of the pasuk, watch your heart. But the deeper meaning of the pasuk is, watch your heart, that's your personality. Watch out for what type of person you are, because that is the source of life. And that's why the pasuk, he says, according to my interpretation, it's a pasuk in Mishlei. It is a mashal, it is an allegory. It's talking about the heart, and it's talking about two types of heart, the physical heart and the spiritual heart. And this is one of the more complete types of allegories that can exist. And here you have the purpose of an allegory the way you should. Why do we have allegories? Why do you have a whole book of Proverbs? It's known that the mind perceives concepts. The mind perceives things that you don't see physically. The job of the mind is to perceive what's going to happen. So the mind can perceive there's a force of gravity here. You don't see gravity pulling things down, but the mind perceives the concept. That teva, now if you ask a person, does God exist? Does life exist? So there are a lot of things which the mind can perceive that the physical cannot necessarily point a finger to. You can say, yes, I understand that. If I see so many things, okay, I can understand there is something behind it. But that's all concepts. V'ateva animzag ba'adam lo yaspik b'zeh. But being that a human being has a physical nature, so he can't live in a world that's only theoretical, that's only a world of the mind. Our physical body forces the mind to illustrate anything, any concept that the mind will try to articulate in physical terms. V'chasher yitzeh ha-sechel liyasher la'ishir ha-teva ve'la'vin oto inyan dak. And sometimes the mind tries to grasp concepts that are elusive. Yitzterech she'ilamdeu elav b'mashal inyan gas mukhash v'karov elav. So then the mind, so to speak, has to talk on the on the body's terminology, on the body's terms, and use a more crass example, something more physical, to illustrate a concept which is more spiritual. Because if you're going to try to discuss a spiritual concept in spiritual terms, then the human being who is composed of mind and body doesn't understand it well. Kedei sheyitkarev elav mimenu ha'inyan hadak asher hu hamechuvan etzlo. That's how the mind, so to speak, can speak to the body or can speak to the person and get him to understand a concept. And so then the mind acts like a good educator and it works with the student, it works with the body or with the person, and slowly tries to explain the point to the body. This is the concept that repeats itself over and over again. You try to grasp a concept, you have to bring it to terms that the human being understands. So I'll give you an example. I could come and tell you that the heart of the Torah is not what's written in the scroll, but the ideas that are expressed in the scroll. Right? You understood it on one level. Now I could tell you the following story. There was once a community that couldn't afford a Sefer Torah. And so they all pitched in and they started saving pennies, and they were very hard working. And so some of the people in the community forewent a meal once a week, and the money from that meal they put into the public fund. And some of the kids started going to the next community and working shining shoes, and each kid would pitch in a few pennies that they made. And over the course of a year and a half to 2 years, every person in the community did something to put together some money for buying that Torah scroll. Women would volunteer and bake cakes, and then they'd go to the big city and sell them and bring home some of the profits they'd put in the fund. And you could understand that every person had their little hand in putting together that Sefer Torah. And when the great day came that they could finally have their own Sefer Torah, you could imagine the joy of the people at the Sefer Torah that every person had a hand in. Every person knew he forewent the meal, his Wednesday night supper, just so that he could pitch in his few pennies. And each child knew what they put into that Sefer Torah. And the joy and the jubilation at the Achnasa Sefer Torah, you could just imagine when people danced and hugged that Sefer Torah, they felt it was theirs. So they bring in the Sefer Torah, and a tragic thing happens. The first Shabbos, after everyone's read this from the Sefer Torah, and everyone comes up and takes a look, and only the most honorable people in the congregation got an aliyah, and everyone went home to eat their Shabbos meal, feeling in seventh heaven, a fire broke out in the shul. And the community hears about it, and they run up to the shul, and everyone looks, and they're standing in disbelief, and the rabbi says, "Wait, you're not allowed to throw water on the fire, but we can take buckets and fill them with water, and when the fire touches the buckets will burst, and they'll try to put out the flames," and they try to see how they could enter the shul, and there's no way, there are so many flames, and they're standing there, and they're getting covered with soot, and they're getting covered, and there's tears strolling down people's cheeks as they're trying, everyone's running and filling buckets of water and putting it next to the fire. After about 5 minutes, as the people are working and their hearts are going out, men, women, children, everyone's doing everything they can according to the rabbi's instructions, and the people are devastated, but they're working, who knows, maybe they'll succeed. After about 5 minutes, 10 minutes, that everyone's working, rabbi, congregants, in walks Yankel Leklutz. And Yankel Leklutz comes from behind the shul building carrying the Sefer Torah. So the mantle is a little bit scorched, but the Sefer Torah is unscathed. He got it just in time. So the rabbi stands there looking at him incredulously, and he says, "Yankel, how'd you get the Sefer Torah? No one could cross those flames and get inside. How'd you do it?" Everyone stops and looks. There's silence. Suddenly, the tears stop streaming. And the rabbi looks at him, and Yankel says, "Oh, it was very simple. I went to the back of the building, I turned on the hose, I squirted the flame until I got the flame down enough, then I leaped inside, grabbed the Sefer Torah, leaped back outside, and I saved the Sefer Torah." The rabbi looks at him and says, "You did what? You directly put out a flame on Shabbos? You just burnt that Sefer Torah." The Sefer Torah isn't about the physical Sefer Torah. When we worked hard to write that Sefer Torah, our point wasn't, we should have an ancient scroll. It's because it represents our life. There's no point in putting out a fire on Shabbos to take out the scroll. The scroll isn't the message. The message is what's in the scroll, the way of life. That's not saving a Sefer Torah. Now, which way did you understand the concept better? Before the story or after the story? Obviously, after the story, now it's etched in your minds, the idea, hey, wait a second, Torah is not just, it's not about the scroll, it's about the way of life that we're taught in that scroll. That's a mashal. That's what the Ran is saying. We have a mind, we have a body. You talk to the mind tries to get a concept across, and our body hears it on some level. So the mind says, let me teach you something. The mind comes and says, I'll tell you an allegory, I'll tell you a story. I'll connect the concept with something that you can experience on your level, and then the mind can the mind with the body can appreciate the concept much better. You tell a person, there's a spirit, and the spirit is about seeing beyond the physical. So a person hears that, it's a nice concept. You tell a person the following story. You're dating the most brilliant girl, and you're convinced she's going to be your wife. And finally, you're ready to propose to her. So you take her out, you plan it perfectly, you get the finest restaurant out on Yafo Street, overlooking the Kotel. You get the timing, you're sitting down for dinner an hour before sunset, and you see the sun setting behind the old city. And as you're sitting there, you've hired a violinist to come and play behind you. And you've hired a special little dessert to come out with a little gift on the plate for her. And there's a note over there. And you're sitting there and the first course is amazing. And the second course, you can't thank them enough. And you're sitting and you have the ambiance and the setting is beautiful. And as you're sitting there watching the sunset, the violinist starts to play. And you look into her eyes and she looks into your eyes. And you, in your dreams, you could have never imagined a more beautiful date. And they bring out dessert and there's that little gift you got for her. And as you're sitting there, you say to her, "Rachel, tell me, you know, we came here for a reason. What do you say?" So Rachel says, "You know, this is so beautiful. This is like a dream. But you know, obviously we're both very moved by what's going on here. Let's talk tomorrow." So fine, you walk away and you're walking on clouds. And the next day you call her and you say, "Okay, Rachel, what do you think?" So Rachel says, "Well, what do you think?" So you say, "Well, last night was amazing. The sunset took me away. I can't get over that beautiful sunset. And the first course, that was so delicious. And, oh, the second course." "Rachel, are you still there? Rachel? Rachel? I was about to tell you about the violinist. He played the nicest piece." Why'd you hang up on him? Because if he was sitting there and focused on the meat and the chicken and the violin and not on her, so then what are we talking about? Well, it's the same idea. People walk away from Shabbos and they'll talk to you about the chunt and the cake and the kugel. Is that what Shabbos is about? What was the concept we just said? There's a spirit and there's the physical. And the spirit is where we're supposed to be. And very often, we're not there. When we think of Shabbos, we think about sleeping late. We think about a good chunt. We think about a good kugel. Where are we? We're the guy calling up Rachel and talking to her about the violin, about the meat. There's a spirit. But notice how we grasp the concept differently when we describe it in our physical terms. So the Ran says, the idea of a mashal, when do we use a mashal? Why do we use allegories? Why do we use proverbs? Because if you try to say a concept, if you just say a sentence, you have to realize that the spirit goes beyond the physical and it's more important. So that's a nice sentence. I heard that. That's very good. You tell a story, you hear about a sunset, you hear about a date, and then you hear about the klutz that starts talking to her about the meat and the chicken and the violin, and she hangs up on him. Oh, now you have a story you're going to walk away with, you're going to remember. That's why we use mishalim. Why do we use proverbs? Because our mind grasps a concept on one level, but because we're physical and spiritual at the same time, so the mind finds a way to express it that the more physical side of us can appreciate it better. And that is really the purpose of most instances that we use proverbs or allegories. But you understand, depending on the topic, well, that's going to define what type of mashal you're going to use.
As King Solomon tells you, there was a small city with few people, and then a big king came along.
He surrounded the city, and he made great fortification around it.
And there was one smart man in the city. He was so smart, he was able to save the whole city. In spite of this great king, in spite of the fact that there were small in numbers.
King Solomon says, and you know what? After he saved the whole city, no one remembers that old wise man who saved the city.
This is an allegory that Shlomo HaMelech said about the human being. That the human being has a mind, and the human being has a soul, and the human being has a body. And very often the mind and the soul can save the body. But we choose to neglect the mind and the soul, in spite of the fact that they should direct us in life. Very often they're not what directs us in life, but rather what directs us in life is our desires. We make decisions based upon what we want, not based upon what we should think. So Shlomo HaMelech wants to get that point across. So he tells us a story about a city that would have been captured, and there's an old man there, and he's smart, and he saves the city, and after they're done using him, no one remembers him. He says it's the same thing with our mind. We use it when we need it, but we don't like listening to it when our mind should help us in making decisions.
But Shlomo HaMelech gave us an allegory so that we understand the concept. That our nature is that our physical attractions, our more mundane desires, are what lead us in life. We desire and we act on that. And that the mind is outnumbered when he's contending with the desires of the body.
And initially you think the mind is this weak organ in the body.
And you think, how could the mind overcome the body? The body is, so to speak, has a mind of its own, right? The body does what it wants, and the body is far more powerful. Look at how many senses we have. Look at how many desires we have. How is the mind going to overcome that? But you can see that weak old man can save the whole city, meaning the mind can overcome the desires of the body.
By the same token, we have to remember that our mind has the capacity to overcome the desires.
Because a little bit of truth overcomes a lot of
lies.
Just as a little bit of light can push away a lot of darkness.
So this is all a concept that Shlomo HaMelech said with an allegory.
Even though the allegory gives across the same concept as the message,
so depends on the topic, but if you
want to give an allegory, so very often you use a different idea to get across this idea, right? I'm talking to you about a date and about a girl, and then from that you understand about Shabbos and about the spirit of Shabbos, right? But that's one type of mashal, where you have to go off topic. The Ran is going to continue and discuss that this mashal, which speaks about the heart,
is a much better mashal, because we say there are two types of hearts, the physical heart and the spiritual heart, but here the mashal is so close to the concept that it's coming to illustrate. And that's why this mashal, he says, my interpretation of the mashal, that when it says this is the source of life, that's a much better interpretation of the verse. So again, what do we see today? The Ran began reiterating the concept he had said earlier, saying that our traits are to a great extent a product of the home we grew up in. We each have free will, but we are predisposed based on our homes. And he explained it with greater depth. He said that just as the chemical makeup of a person affects his actions, so too his actions can affect his chemical makeup, the chemistry of the mind. And so the Ran had said, if a person was born into a certain family and was accustomed to certain behaviors, so then the norm, his predisposition is going to be those behaviors. He can overcome it, but his starting point is at a certain point of his habits. Whereas philosophy, he says, is much, much easier to change. What you believe in is much more a product of your own mind. You might have a starting point of where you grew up, but at the same time, to overcome that and develop your own philosophy is much easier. And that's why the forefathers looked for shiduchim within their own family, even though they didn't agree philosophically with their cousins, with Lavan and the like, but they did agree with them about being kind and good people and helping humanity. Then he went on to say that to his understanding, when the verse says, watch your heart, for that is the source of life, that's a reference to this concept. And he says, my interpretation works better because whenever you have an allegory or a proverb, so you're trying to take a concept that is difficult for the body to accept, and you're illustrating it, the mind illustrates it to the more physical aspects of the person through an allegory. And he says, my interpretation of the verse takes this allegory and says, the source of life is the heart, so it's taking the physical heart, which is the source of life, and that's an allusion to the spiritual heart, which is our tendencies, our behaviors, our personality, and that's a mashal, which is much closer, the two ideas, to one another, than the other interpretations in that verse. And we'll pick up here, Bezalel Shem, next semester.